to be something that changes us. And there's no change. Y'all know that I'm a big quotes person. And I have no idea where it came from. I have no idea who said it. I'm pretty sure that it was a preacher. He said, there's no change without change. Right? There's no change without change. You can't expect your life to get better if something does not change, other than your life getting better. Right? You can't all of a sudden, you're driving north and you can't all of a sudden be driving south, which is a change of direction. But you can't make that change without first making another change. What change inspires change. Change bleeds change. The consequence of change is change, if that makes sense. I know I'm confusing a bunch of you right now. If I'm headed south, the first change that has to happen before I can head north is I have to turn the wheel. There is a change that has to occur before my life can get better. There is a change that has to occur before I can allow God to take over. There is a change that has to occur before I can change. And most of the time, that is us turning loose. That is us letting go. And in Psalm chapter number 40, 39 and 42, we're going to catch the beginning of all three of them, if you have your Bibles this evening. All three are Psalms of David, best we can tell. And David had a unique perspective on things. In that David lived the high life, David lived the low life, and David lived everything in between. And David never found himself in a place that he recalled other people being before. Whenever David stood before that bear, I'm pretty sure he never saw anybody else whoop a bear. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he never saw anyone else whoop a bear whenever that bear come up. Because if I see somebody ahead of me have trouble with a curve in the road, I'm going to hit the brakes. Because I learned from seeing them. I learned from their mistakes. I learned from what they did. David didn't have that luxury. David went through things in his life that he didn't see. You didn't see people slay giants all the time. You didn't see people run up a hill towards somebody that's twice as tall as they are, whose shield weighed more than they did, and throw a rock and hit him in the head and kill him. David didn't see that all the time. That wasn't something that was constant in his life. And so whenever we take a look at the Psalms from David's perspective, we have to understand that he is more dependent on God than we ever could be. Because wisdom is memory. And we have heard things, we have seen things, we know things, we understand things that other people, that David, couldn't. And tonight I want to make two points. Number one is God's got us, if we let Him. And number two is that you're not alone. You're not going through something in your life that other people have not went through already. Makes sense? There's nothing that you can face that someone else hasn't already faced. Psalm chapter number 40. Well, let's start in verse 39, then we're going to go to 42, and then we'll be back to 40. Chapter 39, verse 1, I said, I will take heed to my ways, that I sin not with my tongue, that I will keep my mouth with a bridle while the wicked is before me. I was dumb with silence, I held my peace even from good, and my sorrow stirred. Verse number 4, Lord, make me to know mine end. What is the measure of my days? What is that I may know how frail I am? God, show me exactly how nothing I am. God, help me to see that I can't take heed to my tongue, that I can't bridle my tongue, that even dumb with silence, that even dumb with silence. Verse number 7, and now, Lord, what will I wait for? My hope is in Thee. Go to chapter 42. For the sons of Korah, verse 1, as the hart panteth after the water brooks, so panteth my soul after thee. God, I know how frail I am. God, I know how small I am. God, I know how nothing I am, and my heart panteth after you. Chapter number 40, verse number 1. I waited patiently for the Lord, and he inclined unto me and heard my cry. He brought me up also out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock and established my going. He hath put a new song in my mouth, and even praise unto our God. Many shall see it and fear, and shall trust in the Lord. Blessed is that man that maketh the Lord his trust. I have underlined in my Bible, that man. This evening, are you that man? Are you the man that waits patiently upon the Lord? Are you the man that God brought out of a miry pit? Out of a horrible pit and out of the miry clay. Are you the man that God rescued? Everybody can shake their head up and down. You're the man that God rescued. You're the man that God did not have to, but he did anyway. You're not the only one. I did a little bit of Googling before I prepared this message, and I want to share a few statistics with you. I'm a numbers-oriented person at times. In their lifetime, one out of four people in the United States will consider suicide. Look around this building. It didn't say church people. It said one out of four people in the United States will consider suicide. One out of four. There's several in here. You're not the only one. In their lifetime, one out of 10% of the people in the United States will attempt suicide. One out of 10 will attempt suicide. One out of 10. That's not limited to church people. That's not limited to the world, to the lost people. In our lifetime, 100% of us found ourselves in a horrible pit at some point. In that, we were lost. To some, that is an opportunity to cry for help, an opportunity to see God, an opportunity to seek God. To others, that is an opportunity to wallow in that clay, to sink lower into that quicksand. There is no problem, none, zero, that you can come up to. There's no giant that you can stand before. There's no fiery furnace that you can be thrown into that someone else hasn't already been there. That God hasn't already been there. That God hasn't already overcome it. That God hasn't already taken care of it. There's no situation. Most of you know our story. The last 2.5-3 years has been crazy. Crazy. There's no story that hasn't already been written. There's nothing new under the sun. Someone has already been there. God has already seen it. God has already taken care of it. God has already solved it. He said, he brought me up out of that. He said, Lord, what wait I for? My hope is in thee. Whenever you find yourself in a terrible, awful situation, you can do a couple of different things. You can cry out for help. That's what we normally do. We scream, we holler, we cry. If we're down in a hole, we claw at the walls. If we're stuck under something, we try desperately to get it off of us. And we scream and we holler and we hope that somebody else can come, that somebody else can make it, that somebody else can get to us in time, because we see our impending death. We see our frailty at that point. But the psalmist says, God, show me my frailty now. God, show me my end now. Show me where I'm headed toward now. Make me to know thine end, the measure of my days. Make me to know that death is coming. For this will make me appreciate you more. Lord, my hope is in thee. As a hart panteth after the water brook, so panteth my soul after thee, O God. My soul thirsteth for God, for the living God. And when shall I come and appear before God? When I was in school, teachers used to give what they called a pretest. And what they would do is they hand you a test with basically the same test they're going to give you after they teach the lesson. But they would give you a test on what you're about to learn. And they would say, fill it out to the best of your ability. You're not supposed to make a good grade on it. And you would look down at that test and you'd say, I don't know what this means. When do they put letters in math? And you give it back to the teacher. And you'd go through and you'd answer all of them wrong. You just guess and you'd mark through and you skip half of them. And then at the end of class, after you've been through the material, after you learned, after you learned, after you learned, after you focused, after you did the homework, after you paid attention in class, and you're handed that same test back again, you know what the strange thing is? You know the answers then. Because you were taught it. A lot of times we look at problems like they're a pretest. Like we've never seen it before. Like there's no way in the world that we're supposed to know this, whenever God says that we're not supposed to know anything. That we're supposed to seek after Him. That we're supposed to look to Him. That we're supposed to, verse number 1 of chapter 40, wait patiently for the Lord. But we don't wait. David said, blessed is that man. That man. Blessed is the man that waits on the Lord. Blessed is the man that the Lord picks up out of the horrible pit. Blessed is the man that He puts a new song in his mouth. Even praised our God. The problem with people today, people are messy. Y'all notice that? People are messy. And the problem with sharing your testimony is you're going to get judged for it, right? You're going to. You share something with somebody and it's even remotely dirty, right? You've been through things in your life that you don't like to share. You go share that with somebody and you watch how quick they spread. You know why? Because things that are messy spread like wildfire. Because they're interesting. Because people want that. You know the reason news shares all the bad news but never shares the good news? Because bad news sells better. That's why. Bad news is like Little Debbie cakes and good news is like bananas. You know what the ratio to fudge rounds versus bananas is? Heavy on the fudge round side. You know why? People like them better. Don't matter if it's bad for you. Don't matter if they're going to make you fat and ugly and pimples all over your face and you're going to be slow and it's going to melt your brain. That don't matter. They're delicious. And if you ever wonder how many fudge rounds I can fit in my mouth at one time, the answer is 7. Because I'm a fudge round guy. 7. Fudge rounds are not good for you, but we desire them and we want them. Bad news is not good for us and we desire it and we want it. And we can't share our testimony because we're scared of who's going to hear about it. Because we're scared of where it's going to go. We can't share things in our life, things that we have been through, things that you have been through that could help me. And we can't share that because I don't want people to know my secrets, my scars, my wounds, my problems. You know why? Because we have been hurt by people in the past. That's why. That's what it boils down to. And so we lock them up. We put them in a jar, we squeeze that bottle down tight, and we swallow it, and we shove it as far down as we can get it. We bury it so that it never, ever, ever sees the light of day. And all it's doing is hurting us. All it's doing is rotting us out from the inside. All it's doing is keeping us from blessing others. The psalmist David, he said that he brought me up out of a horrible pit. Out of the miry clay, set my feet upon a rock. Here we go. Pay attention. Verse number 3. And he put a new song in my mouth and praise to our God that many shall see it, fear and trust in the Lord. He did this so that I can be a blessing. He did this so that I can go out. He did this so I can help others who are going through the same things. But we are too proud to do it. Right? Too proud. Shy, bashful, you can use those words, but it's proud. There's a song, and I've been wanting to sing it, and I'm not going to do it, because it's a very monotone song. It's like talking. It's called Let the Truth Be Told, right? Matthew West sings it. And the first verse goes, lie number 1, you're supposed to have it all together. And when they ask how you doing, you just smile and tell them, never better. Lie number 2, everybody's life is perfect except yours. So keep your secrets and your wounds and your scars locked with you behind closed doors. But the truth is rarely told. I say I'm fine, hey I'm fine, oh I'm fine, no I'm fine, but I'm not. I'm broken. And when it's all said and done, And when it's all said and done, nope, forgot the course. I don't know why it's so hard to admit it, when being honest is the only way to fix it. There's no failure, no fault, there's no sin you don't already know. So let the truth be told. We are scared to death to help others through our testimony because we don't want to know what they're going to think. Because we don't want it to get out. Because we don't want other people to know how vulnerable we are. Because we don't want other people to know how sinful we are. Because we don't want other people to know how human we are. Understand that there's not a person in this world that is not sinful. Not a one. All of my life, I took pastors and I put them up on a pulpit way up yonder. Started with my grandpa. And I'd sit down and I'd watch. That man up there is perfect. That man up there is as close to God as you can get it. And I put every preacher that I knew up there. And one by one, as I grew up, I began to see that they're people too. They're people too. They mess up too. God brought them out of a miry pit, out of a horrible pit too. God pulled us out of miry clay. Us, you and I. He pulled us from the same place. He set us on the same rock, which is Jesus Christ. And we are in the same place, willing to serve him. We are not. Able, yes. Willing, no. Blessed is that man that maketh the Lord his trust. Go down, if you would, to verse number 6. He said, sacrifice and offering thou dost not desire. He said, be very careful when you get caught up in religion and what religion wants. He said, you didn't want that. Verse number 8. He said, I delight to do thy will, O my God. Yea, thy law is within my heart. I delight to do thy will. I had a guy ask me a question not too long ago. And I gave him an answer, not really understanding how difficult of a question he asked. I gave him the Sunday school answer. Because if I were to ask any of these kids that aren't paying attention, if I asked them, I said, do you have fun at church? What'd you say? Maybe Connor just agreed. He has fun in church. Is church fun? Sometimes. Depends on if we're eating or not. And if I ask the adults, do you have fun at church? Do you enjoy church or do you feel a spot? Is our delight in the Lord or is it just something that we partake in? Growing up, my mama tried all this weird stuff. She was a stay-at-home mom, but she always tried to help out financially with all these pyramid schemes that she got involved in. Some of you know what I'm talking about. Y'all have done the Southern Living and all that sale from home. So anyway, she did this stuff one time called USANA. And it was supposed to be healthy this and healthy that. And she got some vitamins for us to take, and they were shaped like rocks. They tasted like rocks. And you could drop it on the floor and step on it. It looked like a rock. And it was awful. It was terrible. And she'd say, just swallow it, it's good for you. So we would, every time, we try our best to get rid of that thing without putting it in our mouth. Every now and then we had to absolutely swallow it, so we choke and then puke, and then finally she gave up on us. But she would say, just swallow it, it's good for you. And that's the way we treat church a lot of times. Just show up, it's good for you. Shame on us if that's why we show up. Shame on us. Our delight should be there. We should enjoy it. Ain't that what David said? He said, I was upset when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord. I was mad. I didn't want to go. He said, I was glad. Today you don't see very many people glad. You know why? How many of you are going to show up for a 9 o'clock flight and you're going to pull into the airport parking lot at 8:55? Anybody, raise your hand. Nobody, you know why? You're going to get left. If you're going to go to an LSU baseball game and start time is 7 o'clock, what time are you going to get there? 6:55? 7:05? 7:15? You're going to get there early. Why? Because you want to go. Because you desire it. Because you want to be there. But we can't come to Sunday school. Brother Roy said he was driving by Aces Creek, 9 o'clock this morning, parking lot full. I drove through Pine several times. Drive through Pine, 9 o'clock, parking lot full. Do we purpose in our heart to serve God, to love God, to enjoy it? Or we just do it because it's good for us? It don't taste good. It ain't real comfortable. I don't really like it. That's how we treat worship sometimes. Ain't it? I just hum along because I'm supposed to. I just read my Bible because I'm supposed to, not because I enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, call me and I'll come read with you. I enjoy reading. If you don't enjoy praying, then we need to figure out what's wrong. Because our delight is supposed to be in serving God. We're supposed to enjoy serving God as much or more than we enjoy a baseball game. Our football game, or going fishing or hunting or whatever it is that you like to do. We should enjoy serving God more. That should be our delight. That should be where our goal is. But it's not. And we wonder why we can't trust God. We wonder why we can't serve God. We wonder why that there are holes in our life. We wonder why that there are things in our life that we just can't figure out. We can't explain. And we look to God and we say, God, help me. And then nothing happens. There has to be a change in our life before God can change our life. Has to be a change. God can't change our life until we change our life. I waited patiently for the Lord. You know what that means? When's the last time you went to the DMV? You sit in the DMV in the waiting room. And sit there for a long time. And as you sit there, are you ready to see an attendant? When you walk in and you sit down, you are ready to see an attendant, right? I'm ready. Where are they at? Number 46. You look down. Number 12. You're ready, but they're not, right? So if you are waiting patiently, that means that you're ready, but they are not, right? Apply that principle right here. David said, I waited patiently for the Lord. That means that we are ready to receive Him. Okay? That means we're not distracted with everything else. That means we're not... We have cell phones now. But when I first had to go to the DMV, I had to read MD Digest laying right there on the table. We had to find things to occupy our time. Today, as we wait upon the Lord, we find things to occupy our time and we find things to occupy our mind that are not of Him. Instead of waiting upon the Lord and looking for Him, instead of waiting upon the Lord patiently, knowing that He will, knowing that He can, knowing that He's going to hear us, knowing that He's already brought us up out of a horrible pit, and whatever it is we're going through right now, we are not alone and He's going to bring us through it. There is a statistic for just about everything. Everything. After our house burned, I learned what that statistic is for people losing their homes in a fire. There are statistics for miscarriages. There are statistics for lost children. There are statistics for cancer. There are statistics for hair loss. There are statistics for everything. Anything that you're going through, anything that you're struggling with, anything that you don't think God can get you through, someone else has already been there. Chances are, a Christian that you know has already been there. But for sure, God has already been there. And he said, if you will trust me, I will set your feet upon this rock. I will pick you up to the point that you won't sink anymore. What is the first step if you find yourself in a really, really deep hole? The first step to getting out. Somebody, anybody. Stop digging. Right? If you find yourself down in a hole, stop digging. If you find yourself in a place of total and complete faith collapse, stop digging and look up. What happens when you're in the bottom of a hole and you look down? All you see is dirt, darkness. Right? What happens when you're in the bottom of a hole and you look up? You see light. Look up. Focus on God. Wait for Him to move you. Wait for Him to heal you. Wait. Be ready for Him. Choose to be that man. He had put a new song in my mouth. Even praise unto our God. Many shall see it and fear and shall trust in the Lord. I tried really hard to sing kind of loud this morning, but that tie was just choking me. That's the reason I left it at the house tonight. It was choking me something terrible. I love to sing. I love to sing. If we can't stand up and praise God with as much heart as we cheer for our high school football team, shame on us. If we can't stand up and praise God with as much energy as we root for whatever, anything, shame on us. If God puts a song in our heart, let it out. Blessed is that man that maketh the Lord his trust. Respecteth not the proud, nor such as turn aside to lies. Verse number 8, and we're going to wind up. He says, I delight to do thy will. Oh my God. I want you to know that I don't belong on a pedestal at all, ever. Neither does any other preacher. They don't. Preacher is going to let you down. Chances are you give me a little more time and I'm going to let you down. We mess up. We face things. We battle things. And we do the same thing that everybody else does. We put it in a jar. We screw the lid on tight. And we go bury it where nobody will ever find it. Because we can't let it out. There are things that people go through that they never want to see the light of day. And as long as we hold on to those things, that they're going to hurt us from the inside out. But know that with God, He can pull us out of there. He can break us loose from that. 2 out of 3 people in America today struggle with addiction. 2 out of 3. Look to your left, look to your right. That's 2 of you out of 3 struggle with addiction. It's tough sitting there looking at your husband and your daughter, ain't it? 2 out of 3. And chances are you're one of them. I'm not talking about addiction to alcohol or drugs. I'm talking about addiction to anything. 50% of teenagers coming out of high school today come out of high school either knowing a knowledge of, having seen, watched, been exposed to pornography in high school. 30% of junior high students. This is 8th grade kids. 30%. 50% of college age males come out of college addicted to pornography. And you think it's not a problem? It's an addiction. It's a brain rotting sin, disease. It's a problem, but nobody wants to talk about it. Suicide is a problem, but nobody wants to talk about it. Problems with kids and birth is a problem, but nobody wants to talk about it. Cancer is a problem, but nobody wants to talk about it. Infidelity is a problem, but nobody wants to talk about it. Fornication and adultery is a problem, but nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to talk about it because we don't believe that God can get us out of that. And if we find ourselves in a place, regardless of what the addiction is, regardless of what the problem is, regardless of what's holding us down, if we find ourselves in a place that we don't believe God can help us, that is whenever we are at our absolute lowest. If we find ourselves in a place that we believe we are absolutely alone, that is when we are at our lowest. Because I promise, even in a small group like this, you're not alone in your problems. You're not alone in your trials. You're not alone in your struggles. God said, be that man. Blessed is that man that God pulls out and he glorifies and praises God. Blessed is that man whose delight is in the law of the Lord. Blessed is that man. I pray that we as a church could be those men, those women, those kids, those that stand up and say, hey, I'm a sinner saved by grace. I'm the one that God pulled out of that pit. I'm the one. And whenever God puts a song in our heart, sing.